Welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast. Today we're in Albury Wodonga, not Canberra as usual, and we've caught up with the local independent member, Cathy McGowan. Cathy McGowan, you've had a series of budget consultations in this area, looking at how locals responded to the budget measures. What has come out of that?
Well, first off, when the budget was presented, many people asked me, how are you going to vote? It was seen as a bit of a decisive decision. And I had given it a lot of thought, and then what I realised was the answer at that time I didn't know. So going and talking to my community and getting feedback from them on what they thought for the budget was the tactic I used. So we did a very extensive and short community consultation. Over 750 people in a week got in contact with us. We had face-to-face, we had social media, we had survey forms, we had volunteers going out and collecting information. And I got a very clear message from the community, which certainly makes my job as being the Member of Parliament much easier. The almost uniform sense was that it was a new government and it was their job to come down with a budget, and my job was to support the budget because that's what they got elected to do. And there was some agreement that there was issues in the budget had to be addressed, so that was all good and proper. However, there was a very strong voice that there are about six issues in the budget that people were really unhappy with. And there's no news there. That was the co-payment, it was the deregulation of education, it was the changes to petrol prices, it was all the social security changes that went through, but in particular the imposition of changes for youth allowance and the 6 months without payment. And that was probably the main ones. Age pension, even though that was going to happen further out. So what I was able to do was take that information and put it into a report, and then rang up the relevant ministers and said, I've had this consultation, can I come and speak with you? And I got a very good response to that. So I met with Minister for Health, Minister for Education, Industry, Employment, Telecommunications, and a few others. So excellent access to government and a very good ear. Now, I have to say that they didn't necessarily agree with what we had to say, but be able to represent the people. And the next thing I did after I had those meetings with government, I then took the report to the crossbenchers, to Labor, to the Greens, and to the specific Victorian senators, and said, here's what the people of Indi were saying. And people said, well, there's no news in that, and those issues that you raised very likely won't get through the Senate. So there was a sense that was in line with people. So I was very proud to be able to say that I'd consulted with my community, that supporting the budget generally, there's a lot of really good things in there for rural and regional Australia, and on these issues people were very unhappy with it.
Well, to take just a couple of these, and obviously your vote doesn't make any difference in the House of Representatives, but how will you vote on the Medicare co-payment and the deregulation of university fees?
So can I talk about the deregulation of university fees, because that's the one I've paid the most particular attention to. So I went to see Mr. Pine about it and had a long discussion with him. And I particularly said that the area I know best is agricultural tertiary education. And I wanted to get his feeling, did he actually understand the implications for agricultural education of the changes that he was talking about? And so we had quite a good discussion about this, and I left feeling that no, he didn't, that he was really wanting excellence in education and didn't actually understand the labour force implications for rural and regional Australia of what those changes would mean. And that was the beginning for me, Michelle, to actually go and say, to do some research and say, well, what is the implication for rural and regional Australia? And I discovered that in other years, the government have brought out what they call a budget impact statement, and they've traditionally brought out one on impact on rural and regional Australia. And there wasn't one this year. And I could never find out a reason why. Maybe it just didn't happen. But my sense was that there were the strong reaction I got from my community was that the government hadn't understood that where this was going to land on rural and regional Australia and the circumstances that were different. And the deregulation of education in particular is going to have a huge effect on us, And consequently, I've been working with the deans of the agricultural faculties, and I've been working with my two local universities, and they're saying, look, absolutely, can you go into bat for us? Can you help us with this? It's just not going to work. So the legislation hasn't come to Parliament yet, so I'll wait to see it, but certainly I've been very active with both the government and the crossbenchers saying we need to do this much better.
But you'd oppose it as it stands at the moment?
So the actual budget measure will have a legislation separate to it, so I've actually got to go through and look what happens, but I'm very, very strongly against it.
So would you want Chris Pine, for example, to come and talk to the locals here about it?
So he's actually been and done a tour around the rural and regional universities. So he's gone up in the National Party, he's gone up to Mildura, he's been up to northern New South Wales. And there's a difference in opinion between those like University of New England. The Vice-Chancellor there supports the deregulation, La Trobe Country don't. So no, I don't actually think he needs more information. He's very convinced that what he's going to do is going to work. I'm equally as convinced to show him and get some data to say, look, it's not going to work. And for rural and regional Australia, we need to do things differently.
Have you talked at all to the Nats about this because you think that they would be getting the same messages?
Absolutely, I have been, and yes, we've been talking on it.
And do you think some of those people are going into bat as well?
I'm very confident that from the perspective that they're working on. And I'll just give you this quick story on agriculture. Look, this is an example. In Australia, our research has shown that we need 4,000 agricultural graduates from universities a year, and we're currently producing 800. So we've already got a massive undersupply. And by making our courses more expensive, what we know will happen is people will go to New Zealand and Canada, it's much cheaper, and people will choose other courses. So it's going to grow the problem that we've got. We haven't got enough now. And when I went to see the Minister for Industry, talking about, well, what's the plan in Victoria with the demise of the automotive industry, he said, well, we want to grow agriculture. We want to grow food. So it's clearly there's a disconnect there.
Another proposal by the government that some rural people feel they won't do very well out of is the paid parental leave scheme. It's thought that this will be more generous for the city areas because the more people will be eligible there, they've got higher incomes and so on. What feedback are you getting and what's your attitude?
So the research shows that there's a very small number of women in Indi who will actually benefit from it. So there hasn't been much pushback for women or families saying go and bat. A lot of people have been saying it's absolutely excessive and what we want is childcare. So I've been really interested to see the Productivity Commission report come out, and I think there's general acceptance that that's probably the way to go. However, it's a difficult one for the government.
So you would like to see some of this money put into childcare rather than that scheme?
But not just specifically childcare. What we've got, one of the really good things we've done in this region with childcare is we've designed childcare systems that meet the needs of small rural communities. And going into bat for childcare that's mobile, that operates in small communities so families can come at different times. So it's not just saying childcare, we actually need money that's going to meet the needs of rural and regional communities. So if I could just jump to that one. And I think the fundamental thing that the government is not doing well when I go out to communities is paying attention to rural and regional. There's a sense that one size fits all. And the classic example was this decision this week about the work for the dole and the 400 jobs per week. It was businesses that got in contact with my office and said, what? It's already too expensive to employ people and we'll have to put administrators on to do all this. Can you get onto them and tell them it's not going to work for us? So it was that sense that the businesses in Indi are the government's coalition to them. That's their hunting ground, and they're going, no one talked to us, they clearly don't understand, please get on the phone and tell them that it's not going to work for the businesses. So I thought that was really interesting and very telling.
Have you had time yet to get on the phone?
Well, no, but the letter's been drafted and I think it's going to go out on Monday.
Right, because again, of course, that scheme is up for consultation, but often governments tend to be a bit deaf when they get the bit between the teeth.
Yeah, and again, a very interesting thing happened here in Albury-Wodonga. So I'm on the Victorian side of the border. My colleague on the Albury side is Susan Lee, and she's the Minister for Childcare. So, but she was on the radio during the week saying, look, there'll be, don't get too worried about it. It mightn't happen, and if you're in the country areas, there'll be things happen around it. So obviously her office has been inundated by people as well.
This is on the Dole scheme, not the...
But it was actually on the 40 jobs per
month.
Month, yeah.
Now, we've just heard that in the last 24 hours that the government has sent the Tamils, whom it had to bring to Australia, off to Nauru. What do you think of that sort of decision? Mm. How do you think all that's been handled?
Mm. So I would like to talk about me as a representative of... I know in Indi that there are people who don't support this, but... They haven't come into my office. I hear about it, you know, when I go to the footy matches. But I have had an enormous number of people ring up, talk to me, Kathy, what's going on? This is not the way we do things. And extraordinary disappointment. Not so much that the government's got a policy. I think people are happy that the government's got a policy. But it's they're sort of saying things like, well, the end doesn't justify the means. It's how we do things that matter. And the how we're implementing this policy is falling way short of people's expectations. And they want the government to be better. So I think they could accept that the government's got a policy of deterrent and doing this, but where's the humanity, where's the compassion, where's the our best Australian selves? And someone actually said to me the other day that when Mr. Abbott was speaking in Parliament to the Japanese... to the Japanese Prime Minister, he said that we're proudly our best selves. So someone came in and said, well, we need to be consistent with this. We can't be just our best selves with our former enemies. That's good, but we must be our best selves with how we handle these difficult situations. And I think that captures my view. It's a difficult situation. It requires great tolerance and skill. And I think the government's up to it, but I think we're just not being our best selves with it.
In this general regional area, quite a lot of former asylum seekers who were found to be refugees who'd come in boats have settled, haven't they? Mm. Is that right?
Not so much asylum seekers have settled. We have a very large number of refugees who've come in under the formal refugee program. And in fact, next this very short period, we've got another 400 women with dependent children coming to Albury Wodonga to be resettled on the formal government refugee program.
And how do they fit in locally and how do they find things? Mm.
So an interesting, just before I answer that part of the question, when the last census results came out, in this community of Albury Wodonga and surrounds, the language other than English that's spoken at home by the highest number of people is Nepalese. And that's because we've got such a large number of Bhutanese refugees resettled in Nepal, and that sounds a bit complicated, are now coming and settling in this area. And I have to say, the answer's well. This community's got a very long tradition post-Second World War of accepting migrants and people well and different for many areas of rural and regional Australia, I know. So they're welcomed, the church groups, the community groups get behind them. This Wodonga Council has settlement offices and that people really work well. And my sense is it's really, there's a general acceptance that it's good and it's great for the community and we're very happy to have people come and live here.
And do you find that they find this a good place to live or do they want to move on to the big smoke?
It's a bit hard to generalise. There's two things that happen. Refugees, I think, stay. The people who come on different forms of visas, they get points for coming to the country area. So they come to the country area, they set up a business or do something like that, then they can move back to the city. Now, I'm not quite sure of the details, but there are numbers of people who do come and set up businesses here, particularly in the food area. So that's really enriched our food. And the variety of restaurants we've got. And when I meet them up the street, they say, yeah, they're doing their 2 or 3 years and then they'll go back. And then 2 or 3 years later, I find them still here. So maybe they came for a while and then they eventually moved back to the outer reaches of Sydney or Melbourne.
Now, you mentioned your contacts with a number of ministers and making representations and so on. In general, how are you finding being an independent, trying to get things from the government. And, for example, have you had one-to-ones with Tony Abbott?
So I initially had not a detailed conversation with him, but a certainly hello, we need to work together, and the door was open. I haven't followed that up yet. So that's the first thing. And I have to say, generally speaking, the money's flowing, the ministers are visiting, and the relationships are good.
So they've got over the fact you beat a Liberal?
Oh, absolutely. I think they're well and truly into next election mode and wanting to
win. Well, that mightn't be good.
Yeah, in a way it will be, because I think that will give the people of Indi a real choice. They'll have a choice for a hard-working, community-based independent, or what I call the cargo cult. And I think the people of Indi are up to the discussion about the cargo cult. What will the government offer them for their vote? And is that going to be better for the community than a really good independent member? And I'm going to be watch, and I won't mind, because if the Liberals truly and really, if the Liberals win this seat back, or the Nats, it's because they've got a better candidate than me.
Do you think you'll be facing Sophie Mirabella again?
I think it's odds. I think it's there's good odds to that. Yes, Sophie lives in Wangaratta. Her children go to school there. Her husband's the president of the local Victorian Farmers Federation. She's still very much around. And we had an incident in Wangaratta recently where 60 people got laid off at the Bruck textile factory. And Sophie rang the Minister for Employment, saying, you know, you need to pay some attention to this. And then had a local story in the paper that if she'd been the Minister for Manufacturing, that wouldn't have happened. So she's still very actively involved in politics.
Now, you sit next to someone who is extremely actively involved, and that's Clive Palmer. Tell us about the Clive Palmer of your experience.
And I sit next to him, and also his office is just around the corner.
Right. Does he pop in for tea and scones?
He does, actually. Not so much the tea and scones, but we had a Christmas in July celebration party. We had social gathering, I think it was better the word. So we had Brother Glenn Musket, homemade Christmas cake and Millerwood cheese just before we broke up. And I had 50 or so of the locals, but local in terms of my office in Canberra, come, and some journalists and staffers. And definitely Clive came to that and participated. What I think about Clive is this, that he's serious about what he's doing. And what he's doing is he wants a different sort of Australia. And I don't think it's all about Clive, but I'm not being naive about that. What I've discovered, and I suppose I notice it because it fits in with my values, is he's got a very strong social justice conscience. He notices poor people, he notices the Aussie battler, and he pays attention to them, and he wants to do things better for them. So, for example, I was talking about Bruck Mills, and there was a layoff of staff there. But there was another thing that happened, is the government introduced some legislation that retrospectively cut off assistance to the clothing, footwear and textile, or TCF, industry. And I went and saw Clive about it and said, when this gets to the Senate, what would be your attitude? And he said, look, I'm not across it, tell me the story. So I did. And he said, well, that doesn't sound right, does it? I think we would definitely have to do some research on that. So he was really open to poor policy, negative impact, and what could be better. So, and I thought, well, you can't ask for much more than that. An open heart on stuff that he's able to do something about. So I was pleased about that.
But do you think in general he's using his power responsibly?
It's too early to say. There hasn't been enough legislation go through the Senate, and I haven't seen the negotiations that have taken place, because I think it's in the negotiation that we're going to see that. But on the stuff that I've been involved with and I've had a passionate interest about, which is the price on carbon, I've liked what I've been hearing there. On the mining tax, he's holding on to what he said he would do on those two things. So they're the major bit of legislation that I've been watching. When we go back in the late August, I'll be watching really closely the deals that are made, because I think it's in the deals, and someone has to, you know, do negotiation. It's what is he prepared to stand up and fight for? What is he prepared to give away? And then where will the benefit be? Who will be the winners and losers? So to me, it'll be watching that next 2 months period in Parliament that'll give me a real sense of that. So I'm holding my judgment, and I'm hoping that he will be able to deliver on what he said.
When you said you liked what he did on carbon, were you talking about his senators agreeing with removing the carbon tax, or were you talking about the retention of some of that climate architecture?
Well, it was both. I thought it was certainly the retention of the architecture, and that I liked the compromise of bringing in the emissions trading scheme when the trading partners are on side, because certainly for my electorate that's a really relevant point. And I thought, well, that's a good compromise that we could perhaps work with, and it gave the government some room to move. So I thought that it's a good beginning of his negotiation style, and how he was able to get the government to move, and he held on to what I thought was some very important, as you say, architecture.
Some people say there are two Clive Palmers, that there's the showman who goes out there and strikes poses and really, I guess, pokes at the government with a stick, and there's the tougher negotiating Palmer behind the scenes. Do you think that's right?
I've read there's a book called Clive, and over this winter's break I've read it, and I think I would encourage all the government negotiators to go and get a copy of the book and have a good read of it, because I found it insightful and it was well written, and it gave me a sense that he is absolutely a mining magnate, and he's made his money through real estate, and he is all those things. So you would be absolutely naive to think that he's a soft pussy, you know, no way. But at the same time, the showman bit comes through, because his dad was in show business, and he spent a lot of his time with his dad, and he loves his parents, and his father was very early into making movies, and Clive was all part, and very early, that whole pre-war, I think, time was there. So yes, that was part of his upbringing and the part of his lifestyle. So I think if you go and read the book and you go, oh well, this man, here's what he is. And I came away thinking, well, he's exactly what he is. His background and his family tradition paint a complex man, and he's reasonably true to it.
Well, maybe the government should get the book, because I think finding the key to Clive Palmer has not been that easy for them. What do you make of his calls for a fresh election? Do you think that's just provocation? Or?
This is what I think about it. On one level, I don't want a fresh election, because it's a really hard thing to go. And if we have a double dissolution, I don't think many people in Australia want that. So, no. But on the other hand, I think that, you know, in negotiating, or as a parent bringing up children, and you know you've got a bit of work to do because you've got to bring people around, and I was a teacher too, you need to start with how you're going to finish, because you get really caught if you're trying to be tough if you haven't started out tough. It's hard to come back on that positioning starting. So I watched with great interest how the government was going to do the negotiations with the Palmer United Party, and I thought to myself, oh, it's going to be difficult to claw some of this back. And I think the government very easily could get itself in a few corners where it's got no room to move, to manoeuvre. On the really important legislation for the government, if Palmer doesn't give them what they want and he's not going to negotiate in a way that they want, what does that do for the government? And no one wants in Australia wants to go back to where we were with the last hung parliament. People are absolutely over that, and my election is a result of it. So I think the government's in a very tough position in its relationship with the negotiation with the Palmer United Party. So while I don't want an election, I think it just would be horrible in a way. At some stage, the government's going to have to say no, this and no further. And they would, otherwise they're going to have spent 3 years on the back foot and being held hostage to a place they don't want to go.
So do you think it's possible that there could be an early election?
Well, I don't really think it's possible, because I haven't seen any indication that the government's got the courage, if I could be that hard. I haven't seen it. And I think, well, where does the government go then with its negotiation if they haven't, as a negotiator, if they haven't started out there, they can't redeem it. So that means when I look at it, and I'm only new to this game, but we've got 3 years of very unsatisfactory argy-bargy. And the people of Australia don't want it. They said it really clearly.
Do you think that Joe Hockey, who obviously has to do some of these negotiations on the budget, has performed poorly so far in this regard?
Well, look, I can't really say, because I'm not privy to how it's been happening. I have to watch the results. And seeing how Palmer and the Senate votes over the next period of time will give us a sense of that. I'm just wishing him well, because it's really important to Australia that the government does good negotiation with Palmer, and they do it with values, and they do it with respect, and they do it with integrity, because otherwise we'll get caught into, as I say, what happened in the previous government, and no one wants it. So I just wish him all the strength and all the wisdom that he can muster, and to do it well.
This is Joe Hockey.
This is Joe, and to Mr Abbott, and particularly if I could say to Mr Pine, because this whole education stuff is going to be very difficult negotiation, and it's too important for us to not do it well.
Well, we're here in Wodonga, so can I finally ask, what's the big message that this part of regional Australia would be sending to the government now?
The huge message is to acknowledge that one size does not fit all, that rural and regional Australia has got special and differing needs, and you ignore us at your cost. So understand that employment, 17.5% youth unemployment here, it's not that people... There are some people who are not wanting jobs, but the vast majority do. The jobs are just not there. So punishing people and being punitive does not work. And in my community, people will come together. We will work really hard to do things, and we want to work in partnership with the government. We don't want the government bashing us on the head and telling us we're bad. So I say to the government, set up partnerships with rural and regional Australia, pay attention to our needs. And the most important thing you can do for us at the moment is give us really good NBN and do something such that wherever you are in Australia, you can use your mobile phone. You go to Melbourne and your mobile phones work. You come to here on holidays and you have these black spots. And you can't do business, you can't create jobs, you can't communicate. And I was recently in Bhutan, and I've heard the same in Thailand, that those countries, and lots of Africa, mobile phone coverage wherever you go. So my other message is treat us well, but do for rural and regional Australia with mobile phones and NBN as we've done to roads. Quality roads, $1 billion into the budget. Let's sort it all out so that the country can advance together.
Cathy McGowan, it's good to be in Wodonga and it's good to talk to you. Thanks very much. Thanks to my producer, Matt Dawson, and we'll have another interview with you soon.